All right. We are holding on Hey Amid Bays, two lines from the bottom. Tarabonim, we learned in the Braisa. So we're still on this topic. Okay. We're still, as before, on the topic of the Chofei Amidbeis, two lines from the bottom. We're on the topic we started yesterday about Oisik Mitzvah Patim and HaMitzvah, and specifically we were talking about a chassan being Patim, we said, from Kriyishma, and we talked about the idea of the chassan and the members of the Sheva Brachas party are Patim from Sukkah, for the reasons that we talked about yesterday. So, Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a Braith. Chassan v'hashushvinin, again, like we said yesterday, the shushvinin are the people who are closely involved in making the wedding. V'chol b'nei chopa, and all the other members of the chopa, all the other people who are joining in the Sheva Brachas. P'tur min ha'tfilah min ha'tfilin, they are all potter from tefillah and tefillin. V'chayovin v'kriyishma, but they're all chayiv in kriyishma. Now, what does this mean, actually? Does this mean, when we say that they're potter from tefillah and tefillin, is it because, like we said yesterday, they're osik v'mitzvah? Or, on the contrary, is this braisa disagreeing with that one and saying they're not potter from mitzvah, but when it comes to tefillin and tefillah, those need more kavana? That's how Rashi holds. We don't hold that the chassan himself, we can argue, with osik v'mitzvah. Like we said yesterday, he's totaled in the mitzvah, although not necessarily, because maybe once he was boil, then he's not so totaled in the mitzvah either. But the shushvinin and everybody else are definitely don't have that kind of tuda. So therefore, there's reason to argue, this is how Rashi holds, and Tosfos as well, that, or actually Tosfos quotes Rashi, but argues with him, that the reason why we're saying they're potter from tefillah and tefillin is not because they're in general potter from mitzvahs. They would be chayiv in sukkah, for example. They're potter from tefillah and tefillin because those require a great deal of kavana. They're chayiv in kriyishma because that you'll need potter kriyishma, so they can calm themselves down long enough to be able to say potter kriyishma with kavana.
So it's the first time really that we see that you can be potter in a mitzvah from the fact that we need more kavana.
No, because we talked about yesterday, for example. That's one reason why we said that a chassan is potter from kriyishma. Because he's tarud, because tarud machsheres vila, like Rashi said there.
Right, but that's another mitzvah.
Yeah, well, that's what we're talking about. These guys are also involved in a mitzvah. They're involved in being a sameach chas and v'kala. But nevertheless, this braisa seems to be saying, according to Rashi, that nevertheless they're still chayev in mitzvahs. We are mechayev them in whatever ones they're able to do, such as shema, which they're easily able to do. Whereas we're patering them from other ones because the fact is they're not going to have that kind of kavana right now. Whereas other Meforshim, other Rishonim learn differently, that no, this Braitha is continuing from the discussion yesterday. It means that they're potter because Oisik Mitzvah, Potter Min HaMitzvah. Mishum Rav Shila Amru, in the name of Rav Shila, they said, no, Chassin Potter, the Chassin himself is Potter from Kriyashma because of his Tirda, Rashi Shvinin, V'chol B'chayavin, but the Shoshvinin and all the other people who are involved with the Chopa are all Chayav, because, like we said yesterday, the Chassin himself has the Tirda of the Mitzvah. The rest of them are chayev.
So he disagrees with the
Tanakhama. He disagrees with the Tanakhama. But again, according to Rashi, it comes out that both the Tanakhama and Rav Shila here are disagreeing with this concept that Oisik Mitzvah Potter Min HaMitzvah. Well, maybe they agree with it, but not in this context over here. Tani, we learn in a Braisa. Amar Rav Hanani ben Akavya. Kosvei Sfarim Tefillin U'Mezuzos. People who write Sifrei Sofrim, who write Sifrei Torah Tefillin U'Mezuzos. Hein, they themselves, V'Tagrehen, and their traders, the people who the wholesalers who they sell tefillin and mezuzahs to, let's say, to resell to the general public, the tagurei tagureihen, and the merchants of their merchants, the Reuven the sofer sells it to Shimon, who then breaks them into batches and sells them to Levi, and then Yehuda comes and buys them, v'chol ha'oskin b'melachas shamayim, and everybody else who's involved in the work of Hashem, which the Gemara interjects and points out, who are they? L'asuya mechut chelus. This comes to include, for example, people who also people who sell chelus for tzitzis. Well, there's actually, the portion talk about, does it mean specifically chelus, which in that case, right, that wouldn't apply nowadays, or does it mean more generally tzitzis? And they were just using chelus as an illustration, because that's a common, or even some of Farshim actually say, I think Rabbi Yaakov Emden says this, that the vort is, the reason why specifically we mention chelus is because we know that you don't need chelus to be mekayim with tzitzis. You mekayim it with lavan as well, which of course is what we do nowadays. So you might have thought then, people who are involved in selling chelus are not doing something so essential. Nevertheless, we're saying they still count just as much as the people who are involved in selling Sifrei Torah, etc. Anyway, all those kinds of people, children with Krishma, Menatfilim, Menatfilim, they're potter from Krishma, from Tfilah, and from Tfilim, from the Kol Mitzvah, Amoris, Torah, and from all the other mitzvahs that it says in the Torah, which Tosfos points out, once we say they're potter from all the mitzvahs, we didn't have to mention those specific ones. The reason it mentions those specific ones is because the previous braisa about the Chosin and the Shushvinin, because that previous braisa about the Chosin and the Shushvinin mentioned those three mitzvahs.
What? Neighbor?
Huh?
What did you say?
I said it's pretty bad. Because you can only get three people, but...
We're not neighbor. Chaz v'shalom.
All right. Nope.
Asher Yeshud Yisrecha.
Anyway. We're holding the top of Chavav Amad Beis. Amad Aleph, rather. Chavav Amad Aleph, yeah. So all these people who are involved in selling, in making and selling Sifrei Torah, Tefillah, and Mezuzah, it's Tzelus, are potter from the various mitzvahs. L'kayim divrei Rabbi Yisrael Gmili, this agrees with or fulfills what Rabbi Yisrael Gmili said. Shaya Rabbi Yisrael Gmili, Omer, Ha'isik mitzvah, potter mina mitzvah. Somebody who's involved in one mitzvah is potter from another one. The Aruch Haner points out an odd expression, l'kayim. I mean, usually you would just say, l'pnei, Sha'isik mitzvah, potter mina mitzvah, or words to that effect. What's the l'kayim? He says, but it's not Rabbi Yisrael Gmili saying it's not a potter, but he says, the Aruch Haner says an interesting thing. Before we were talking about people who themselves are doing a mitzvah. People, the chassan, for example, who's doing the mitzvah of getting married, the people who were involved with the mess mitzvah, etc. Here now we're talking about people who are indirectly involved with it. The sefer himself is not doing a mitzvah when he writes tefillin, for example. He's enabling somebody else to accomplish the mitzvah. So you might think maybe he doesn't have that same truth. That's why l'kayim, he's helping to be m'kayim, he's helping other people to be m'kayim in the mitzvah, and therefore that still fits with what Rabbi Yisrael really said, that he's oisik mitzvah.
What would you say? You don't have to write it at that time in the year?
He doesn't have to write it at that time, or b'chalal, he himself doesn't have to be the one writing it. I mean, there's many other sefer around. The Gemara points out in other places, for example, that there used to be in those days a place called Bei Bar Chavu, where you could buy tefillin very easily. I mean, it was the equivalent of Judaica world or something nowadays, you know, or a writer or whatever. You know, you can walk in and pick up a pair of tefillin.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, obviously they must have had a lot of sefer on staff. But the point is, each individual one, you might argue, is not so essential to the thing. But yeah, we're saying nevertheless they are, because they are helping other people being mekayim mitzvah. And again, you know, we have the same machlokas rishonim that we discussed yesterday about in what cases do we say that oisik mitzvah is potter min mitzvah. Is it, you know, is it a blanket pter, or is it only when the doing the other mitzvah is going to in any way interfere with their doing the mitzvah now, or make it more difficult to do, or whatever? Yeah. We learn in a braisa, hochet drachim bayom, people who are traveling on road by day, termina sukkah bayom, so they're potter from sukkah by day, v'chayovim balayla, and they're chayev to be in a sukkah at night, because they're not traveling then. There's actually a little bit of a difference. There's a couple of different achronim who I think the Lavush versus the Taz that discuss what does this mean exactly. Does it mean that at night they're not mechuyev to go and find a place where there's a sukkah to sleep, or does it mean that they're not mechuyev to put up a sukkah themselves wherever they happen to be? Or they are, rather. They were saying that they are chayev at night, right? Doesn't mean they have to go seek out a place where there is a sukkah, but if they can't find one, then they can still make do without one. Or does it mean that no matter what, they have to have a sukkah at night, because then they're not oisik in something else? Hochet drachim balayla, and if it's the other way around, if they're traveling at night, turim in sukkah balayla, v'chayev v'yayim, and they're potter from sukkah by night, and they're chayev by day. Hochet drachim bayayim v'alayla, people who are traveling by day and by night, turim in sukkah bayayim v'alayla. Then they're potter both by day and by night because they're traveling 24 hours.
If you travel by plane, you would say.
Well, yeah, as a practical matter, a plane you can't make up a sukkah. Yeah, there is actually, you know, I mean, you know, in general we try, you know, especially minhag Chabad, we don't eat or drink anything outside the sukkah. We're very, very machmir on that, as we'll see in the next Mishnah about the pros and cons of that kind of chumrah. So you know. But even outside Chabad, and I don't think in general people rely on that kind of heter to say, you know, for example, I'm traveling, I don't need to bother with the sukkah. You know, you at least try to do what you can. There is actually, by the way, a very interesting discussion between Rav Moshe Feinstein and I think Rav Yosef Shalom Al-Yashiv both discussed the issue. Here we're talking about in the Gemara a person that's traveling on business, for example, which, okay, you know, there's certain kinds of business you have to do Chol HaMoed, and in Shulchan Aruch it gives one example that they had in those days, you know, a person, you know, a typical Jewish innkeeper during the year, you know, he's selling mashke to the goyim on credit. Sooner or later he has to go and collect his debts from them, and, you know, a logical time to do that right after the harvest has come in, you know, so that he can have them pay him right away in grain or whatever before they use it all up. So imagine that comes during Chol HaMoed, traveling to these goyish towns in the middle of Chol HaMoed, yeah. So, the question is that Rav Moshe and Rav Yosef Shalom discuss is what about a person who's traveling for pleasure? You know, Chol HaMoed, you go on trips with your family. Do you have the same kind of tour then? If I remember correctly, Rav Moshe argues that no, this tour only applies to traveling on business or for other necessary purposes like pidyon shvuyim or whatever, oisik mitzvah, but not stam to traveling for pleasure. Whereas Rav Yosef Shalom says it applies even to that. I might have that backwards though.
Where did he say that, Rav Moshe?
Rav Moshe writes that in some place in Eglis Moshe. Oh, yes. And as far as Rav Yosef Shalom, there's a sefer with Ordos HaMosech HaSukkah, I think it's called, or something to that effect, that it's Talmidim collected from his shiurim, so his thing is in there. I actually saw on the Israeli Daf Yomi site that I use as part of my preparation. The guy over there, Rabbi Kornfeld, his name is, writes that maybe each one of them is talking about a different metzius. Here in America, the traveling itself is half the fun. You don't just drive from point A to point B in order to get to point B. The drive itself is part of the fun also. So therefore, you can argue that you're chayiv and sukkah on the way. Whereas in Israel, people travel to get to a destination. The travel is not, you know, like, yeah. Anyway. Hochem, the dvar mitzvah p'turim ben b'yom ben b'layla, and people who are going for a mitzvah are potter from sukkah both by day and by night. Here we're not talking about even if they're only traveling by day, for example, they nevertheless, they again, based on the different Rishonim that we talked about yesterday, the Tosfos versus the Ran versus the Ozer Ruah, you know, that because looking around for a sukkah, for example, by night is going to may interfere with their traveling on the way as fast as possible. They have to go out of their way to find some place where they can find a sukkah at night, so therefore they can be potter even by night, even though they're traveling by day. Like we have the case of Rav Chista and Rav Bar Avuna, when they would come on the Shabbos of the Yom Tov, Shabbos Chol HaMoed, to the house of the Reish Kalusa, which then they're accomplishing two things by that. We actually had this earlier in the Masechta, and we'll talk about it more tomorrow, that number one, they're being mekabel pnei Rabbi Berego, which is an important thing to greet their Rebbe during the Yom Tov. The Reish Kalusa is considered like their Rebbe because he's the leader of the Jewish people at that time. Second of all, he would give a drasha, so they're coming for that as well, to learn Torah from him. So therefore, when they would come, and it was a standard thing on the Shabbos of Chol HaMoed that this would happen, this was the time for that. So therefore, Havugonu Araksa de Surah, they would sleep by the banks of the river Surah. Instead, Gonu means sleeping, Araksa by the bank, the Surah of Surah, meaning of the river Surah. Obviously, the city Surah was named for the river. Amri, because they said, why are we sleeping by the bank of the river instead of going and finding a sukkah in town? Anan shluchei mitzvah, anan upturin, we're shluchei mitzvah, we're coming here for a mitzvah, and therefore we're potter, because we can't go find some sukkah in town, and then tomorrow morning we'll be late to go and be mekabel ponim, the Reish Kalusa, and hear his drasha. So therefore we need to sleep as close as possible to his place. We had a couple of weeks ago, actually, a similar story also with these two Amoraim, where they visited the Reish Kalusa, also Shabbos of the Rigla, and Rav Nachman did put them up in a sukkah, only it was one that Rav Nachman held as kosher, and they held as possible because the no sukkah were hanging more than four tefachim below the schach, etc. So the Aruch HaNer points out those are two different stories. Usually they would come only for the Shabbos, of Chol HaMoed itself, and that's the story we're talking about over here, where therefore at that point there's Shluchei Mitzvah, therefore they're completely potter from sukkah, and therefore they would sleep by the bank of the river. The other time that we had on Daf Yud was actually they came a couple of days early. So then There's not so much of an argument. Nevertheless, they're still considered shluchim mitzvah, but it wasn't so blatantly obvious that they're coming, that they're shluchim mitzvah right now. Therefore, at least they wanted to like give the appearance, you know, to that people shouldn't think you don't have to sleep in a sukkah b'chlal. They actually went and looked for a sukkah, but sort of Nachman put them up in one which they held as possible. They didn't object because they were saying to themselves, you know, we're only doing it for the sake of appearances anyway, because really we're shluchim mitzvah.
Do they live in the area?
Apparently not. If they lived in the area, they could have just walked over.
They didn't come from Eretz Yisrael.
No, not from Eretz Yisrael, but they lived in some other town in Babel. I mean, Babel is a big place.
Yeah, but I mean, they were the time of Mitzvah the other day, so they just came there for that.
Yeah, apparently.
It's not like they set a 7-day journey or anything.
You know what? We will actually have later in the Masechta, we will have, I think on Daf Mem Zayin, we will have a couple of Amoraim who actually did not sit in a sukkah throughout the entire 7 days of sukkahs because they were busy traveling. We'll talk about it, and we'll get to it in 3 weeks, Be'ez Hashem. But yeah.
Are we going to also elaborate on this sukkah, the chiyuv of sukkah, in face of sakana or in situations?
We'll get to it, and well, I mean, we had earlier in the Masechta briefly, we had the story where Rabbi Yehuda said that, you know, we had one time we had to make a sukkah that with wide boards, even though normally that would be a problem because it was shasa sakana, yeah. Tanarabanan. Shomrei ha'ir b'yom. Actually, here we'll have something a little bit about sakana. Shomrei ha'ir b'yom. People who are guarding the city by day. Turim in sukkah b'yom. B'chayav b'alayla. They're potter from sukkah by day. They're chayav by night because they have to. They can't sit in one place. They have to be walking around the city. So therefore, In general, the previous thing that we had about travelers and also then this thing about the city watchmen. It's all based on the idea of peishvu ke'en taduru. The pasuk says, "Basukas teishvu shivat yamim," and we understand from that it means teishvu. You should live in the sukkah the way you live in your house the rest of the year. So, to give an example, with the hochad yachim, the previous thing, for example, a person doesn't stay in his house 365 days a year. Sometimes he travels on business. So, the same way as a person during the year can travel on business and is not expected to always eat at home, the same way we're saying during the sukkah, the person can be traveling on business and we're not expecting him to eat in the sukkah. Which again, you know, that gets into the question of pleasure trips. I mean, on the one hand, you can argue people do pleasure trips, but on the other hand, maybe the heter is only when it's necessary. So similarly over here, the shomer here, these people are walking around the city all the time. They think of like the guards by Buckingham Palace or whatever. They don't sit in one place. So therefore, they can't make a sukkah because they're walking around all the time. Yeah. So therefore, they're potter by day, b'chayav and b'layla, and they're chayav at night, because then they go to sleep. Shemir b'layla, the night watchman, is the other way around. Turim and asukah b'layla, b'chayav and b'yayim. They're potter by night, and they're chayav by day. Shemir ha'ir ben b'yayim ben b'layla. What if they're on duty for 24 hours? Turim ben asukah ben b'yayim ben b'layla. Then they're potter both by day and by night. Shemir ganas b'pardesim, and watchmen of people who are watching, not cities, but who are watching gardens, not fields, gardens or orchards, turb bain bayim bain malayla. They are also potter from sukkah both by day and by night.
Even though they don't move.
Even though they don't move, right. You know, they sit in one place.
Why not sadeh
sukkah? 1 second. The question is, why don't they just make a sukkah in the place where they're sitting? Mela, the city watchmen, are walking around all the time. These people who are watching, you're watching a garden, you're sitting in one place. Make a sukkah there anyway. Abaya Amar Teishvu Kein Taduru. So Abaya says it's for the same reason, Teishvu Kein Taduru, meaning the way that a person usually lives in his house year-round is he has his furniture with him. A person like this who's staying over here to watch an orchard or whatever, he can't bring furniture there. It's too much of a hassle. So therefore, he's not living there like the way he would live there throughout the year. So therefore, he's potter on that basis. Rava Amar Pirta Kara Lagana. Rava says a different reason. It's like the expression that a breach calls out to the Gana, like, you know, tells him, like, you know, come in and steal. If the Ganav realizes, if he sees a sukkah built over there, then he thinks to himself, ah, so you know what? So the guy is only over here in the orchard. Very well, I'll sneak in from this side and start stealing food. So therefore, we don't make the person go to suffer a loss on that basis. And yeah.
What does Rashi say? If he sees the sting of the sukkah at night, it's different at night. Then.
Well, because if it was by day, then people don't normally steal by day anyway. Yeah, the passion. But that's the point. Even though he may only be watching by day, he's not the night watchman, for example. But nevertheless, if the ganav sees a sukkah over there, then he's going to think that he's going to think the night watchman is there, and therefore the other side is open for the taking. My binayu, the Gemara says, what's the practical difference between them? The answer is ikka binayu dekam min jekayu yedepeiri. The nafkamina would be what if it's neither a garden nor an orchard which he's watching, which there you have a lot of trees in the way and whatnot, and it's a big area. What if he's guarding a heap of produce? You were mentioning a field. I mean, practically speaking, sukkah time, there's not really much to watch in a field anyway. The harvest has already been done. But if you have a pile of grain over there, or a pile of produce or whatever, it's all, now on the one hand, it's all in one place. So Rava's reason wouldn't apply. There's no pirtz akaris laganav. You make your, the pile is over here. You're making your sukkah over here. Fine, you're right there next to the pile. No ganav is going to come and steal from it. On the other hand, there's still the abayas issue of teshuvu kein nedur. The fact is, you're not going to live there like you would in a house year round.
Would it be the hired workers or rather the citizens of the balabas?
Could be either way. Yeah, peer to clear at the ganav is like an expression. If there's a hole, you know what it's like. You ever heard of broken windows? The broken windows theory that when there are broken windows around town, it starts giving people the idea, hey, the criminals, the idea, hey, you know, this place, nobody's looking after this place. Let's go commit worse crime. Yeah. Similar idea. When there is a hole in a fence of the field, then it like calls to the ganav, hey, you know, the owner is obviously not looking after the place. Let's sneak in. The Mishnah says cholim u'masham shehem, that's sick people and their attendants, a potter from Sukkah. Tana Rabbanan, chola sha'avru, loy chola sheyesh betakana. We're not talking about a chola who's dangerously ill, obviously then, he's potter, it's a matter of poor nefesh. El afil a chola she'en betakana, even someone who is sick, but not in a dangerous way, and not in a life-threatening way. Afil a chosh ve'enav, even, for example, he has an eye ache. Which Shaitis points out, there are certain kinds of eye aches that in halacha are actually considered to be pekuach nefesh. And there are kinds that you can be mechal Shabbos for. We're not talking about that kind. We're talking about just, a person that's sore eyes, red eyes, pink eye, whatever. Even if he has a headache. There is an interesting thing on that, though, that the Taz wants to say, if the Taz wants to say, if I remember correctly, that the patur of being potter from the sukkah is davka when your tsar has something directly to do with the sukkah. Like, being in the sukkah is going to make things worse. But not, for example, if a person just has a headache and he'd have the same headache whether he's in or out of the sukkah, not necessarily would he be potter from sukkah on those grounds. Only if being in the sukkah is going to make his headache worse, or the other way around, in the house he can treat it better or whatever, that's when we're talking about he's positive. Omer Reb Shimon Gamliel, here's an example. Pam achas chashti ve'enai v'kesiri. One time I had an eye ache in the city of Kesiri. V'hitir Rab Yosi b'ribi lishen ani umasham shaychot l'sukkah. And Rab Yosi b'ribi allowed me and my attendants to sleep outside the sukkah. B'ribi, Rashi points out, by the way, doesn't mean, B'ribi is not his father's name. His father's name wasn't Ribi. B'ribi is an expression that the Gemara uses a lot of times to mean the great chacham of the generation. Rashi says, Yosi ha-chacham chorib shebejoira. He was the short-tongued chacham of his generation. Which Rabbi Yosi? Is it the famous Rabbi Yosi? Rabbi Yosi ben Chalasta. You even have, there's a couple of places in Gemara where you have B'ribi as a name by itself. Rabbi Yosi ben Chalasta was his father's name. Rabbi Yosi ben Chalasta, the regular Rabbi Yosi from the Mishnah and Brisas is this Rabbi Yosi ben Chalasta. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel calls him Rabbi Yosi B'ribi to represent the idea that he was a great sharp Talmud Chacham. So yeah, so I had an eye ache and he gave me permission, me and my Mesharim, to sleep outside the sukkah. Some other examples. Rav Sharalah Rav Acha Bardalah Lamigna Bekilsa Besukkah Mishum Baki. Rav allowed Rav Acha Bardalah to sleep in a canopy bed in the sukkah because of the mosquitoes. Now, we learned in the first parak that sleeping in a canopy bed under a sukkah, there is one day that says that it's allowed. But but the halacha is not like that. We had Rav Bar Rav Huna said that you're allowed to sleep in such a thing in the sukkah. But the halacha wasn't like that. The halacha is not like that. So the point is like this. The point is like this. Rabbi Acha Bardalah was having a problem sleeping in the sukkah because of the mosquitoes. So the choice is either he puts up with it, never mind, mosquitoes, doesn't matter, mosquitoes, I'm sleeping in the sukkah anyway because it's a mitzvah, or number two, you allow him to sleep outside the sukkah, or a third possibility is you allow him to sleep in the sukkah in a way you allow him to sleep under a mosquito netting. So that's what Rav allowed him to do. at least you're sleeping in the sukkah, and at least you're being mekayim in the sukkah according to one opinion. I have a halacha is not like that opinion. Okay,
right.
But at least you're doing something.
What happens if you're in East Africa and there is a real danger of mosquitoes?
So the danger is a different matter. If it's a matter of pekuach nefesh, that's a whole different matter. That's, you know, and we're not talking about that. Another example, Rava Shorolah Rav Acha Ba'adah L'migna Barmim Talalta. Rava allowed Rav Acha Ba'adah to sleep outside the sukkah. Mishum Sircha de Gaugishta, because of the smell of the earth. Rashi says that Gaugishta means white, means kind of white clay. They covered the floor of the sukkah with it. There are many people who have the minhag to that when wherever they put the sukkah, they make like a special floor for it. So here they use this kind of white earth. Rav Acha Ba'ada found the smell to be offensive. He couldn't sleep there. Therefore, Rav allowed him to sleep outside the sukkah. Now, we don't mean this wasn't Rav Acha Ba'ada's own sukkah. Rav Acha Ba'ada's own sukkah, obviously, because we actually had earlier in the Masechta that you're not allowed, for example, you're not allowed to use smelly things to scat because you're not going to be able to stay in such a sukkah. What we're talking about over here, Mephoshim say, is that, first of all, Rav Acha Ba'ada was visiting the sukkah, and second of all, his host didn't realize that he's so sensitive. So they had put this white earth over there, and they were in the sukkah. None of them had a problem with it. He came, and all of a sudden, you know, he found he couldn't tolerate it.
So
therefore, he was able to manage it while he was eating, but not while he was sleeping.
How much fire, Charlie?
Obviously, the host saw that he's having trouble. What do you do in that case? You go ask it up. That's why they went and asked Rava. Rava l'taimei, Rava goes according to his shita dama, Rava mitzayr potim in a sukkah. Rava says that a person who's having tzayr is potim from the sukkah, yeah. Question is, he says, what do you mean? V'hanan t'nan cholunim sham shem turim in a sukkah. The Mishnah said that sick people and their attendants are potim from the sukkah. Chola ain mitzayr loya. Chola is potim, mitzayr is not. Amri, they answered, the difference is chola hu m'sham shef turin. When it comes to a chola, both he and his attendants are potim from the sukkah. Mitzar, but when it comes to a mitzar, who potter? He is potter from the sukkah, but mishamshav loy. His mishamshim are not potter because why the chalal of the mishamshim potter? There's a couple of different reasons that are given. One reason which the Lavush gives and the Alter Rebbe brings in Shulchan Aruch is because the mishamshim are osik b'mitzvah. They're involved in the mitzvah of taking care of a chola. Well, the mitzar, they're not being osik b'mitzvah. So he has tzar in the sukkah. Fine, they're not doing a mitzvah by tending to him. So therefore, they're chayiv. They remain chayiv in sukkah. Mishnah said, "Oichlam achilas arayi chutzpuch." You're allowed to eat a snack outside the sukkah. But kama achilas arayi? So how much is considered a snack? Amar Rabbi Yosef, "Tauti a klas bay." It means two or three eggs. Now, actually, it seems from Rashi that he did not have the girsa. He did not have the word eggs in his girsa. It seems that because Rashi explains that it means shtayim or shalosh pomim yitzin lo tzev, two or three little morsels of food that a person puts into his mouth.
Maybe the muscle of bayim is.
Having said that, actually, the Tosfos says, the fact is, we're talking about the amount of food that fits in a person's mouth, that fits down a person's throat at a time. And we know from other places in the Gemara that is a kebesa. So it does amount to the same thing. Whether we have the word bay in there or not, either way, it means two or three eggs worth of food, two or three mouthfuls of food.
There's even a lot of things that can
want
to do it.
Yeah, okay.
She uses the French word, the...
Morshelish, yeah, which is morsels, yeah.
Yeah, morsels.
Yeah. Amalei Abayas. Abayas says, "What do you mean, two or three eggs?" Well, zimnit sagi and sagin leilish b'hachi. Sometimes that's all a person needs to eat. V'havalei sudas kvadah. It becomes a permanent sudah. What do you mean? That's a snack.
That's talking about a permanent.
We're talking about it. Rabbi Yosef is saying that that's considered achilas arai, but Abayas is telling him. No, but we don't mean eggs themselves. Eggs themselves, you don't have to eat in the sukkah. We're talking about bread. We're talking about bread the size of two or three eggs. So rather, Abaya says, no, we're talking about, for example, the amount of food that a yeshiva eats quickly and then goes to the kala, to the shear. Which, you know, he doesn't know how long the shear is going to last. Small amount. Like, you know, he eats, Rashi says, maloy pir, like a mouthful.
Charcoal?
Yeah. But the point is, it could be bread as well. So we're saying, that amount of food, a person can eat outside the sukkah, a mouthful, let's say. The shear is called a kala. Why? For one reason, because the Torah is compared to a kala. Yahakala, right. That's where the name Yahakala comes from, right.
Yeah.
The month of the kala, the month of the shearim, yeah. Whatever once quoted this, and they never seem to understand that what we're talking about is actually that the Bar Beirav eats it while he's walking to the Kala, which then they never discussed what about the whole idea of Ochel B'Shuk Gomel HaKelev. And the gist of it is, generally speaking, Ochel B'Shuk Gomel HaKelev, but that's why it doesn't say Kol Ochel B'Shuk Gomel HaKelev, because there are exceptions, like here. Tanan Rabban, we learn in a Braisa, Ochel Achilas Arai Chutz L'Sukkah, you're allowed to eat a casual meal, a snack, outside the Sukkah. Ve'en Yeshenim, Shenis Arai Chutz L'Sukkah, but you're not allowed to sleep, a casual sleep, a nap, outside the Sukkah. My timer, why is that? Amar Rabashi, Gzeder, Shema Yerodam. Because it's Gzeder, because he might actually fall completely asleep. And then it'll be a Kriyas. Amar Abaya. Abaya says to him, what do you mean? Eloha Tanya, Yoshin Adam, Shena Sarai, but Tefillin, Avalo Shena Skva. What about the din when it comes to Tefillin? We say a person is allowed to sleep, a nap is allowed to take a nap in Tefillin. With Tefillin, there's always the concern if you fall asleep in Tefillin that you may pass wind. But nevertheless, wind, gas. That nevertheless, though, we're saying that a person is allowed to take a nap in tefillin, have a low shein eskvah, but not a full sleep. Leichos shemi yerodam, say the same thing. The same thing that he's saying by sukkah, that he might fall completely asleep. Same thing over here, he might fall completely asleep in tefillin. Amar Rabbi Yosef, Rezi Rabbi Loi, but Moses shenotzi l'achirim. Right, but what we're talking about over here is a case where the person gives over his sleep to somebody else. He tells somebody else, you be my alarm clock. If I fall completely asleep, wake me up. Completely asleep. We'll talk about soon what the amount is. Mashashi asks on that, what do you mean? Avach Avach Tzarech. Your Arev needs an Arev himself. In other words, you're telling somebody else, wake me up. How do you know the other guy's not going to fall asleep? You're right. What we're talking about over here, then, we have to say is different. We're not distinguishing between a nap and regular sleep as far as where you're sleeping in the same way, you're laying down in the same way. What kind of nap are you allowed to do in tefillin, putting your head down between your knees? That, of necessity, is going to be a very short nap. Rava Amar Ein Kva L'Shena. Rava gives a different answer. It's true. We're not concerned that the person might fall completely asleep. So by tefillin, maybe even a person is actually allowed to lay down for a short nap while wearing tefillin. Remember, in those times, people wore tefillin most of the day.
Well,
because they didn't wear tefillin at night, but yeah.
Why did you not take off his tefillin and take a nap and
You could, technically, but the point is we're saying you don't have to. If your person's just going to take a short nap, which we'll say in a minute how long that short nap is, then you don't have to. But Rabbi is saying, ain't kva l'shena. There's no kvius as far as sleep, meaning a nap is just as much sleep as real sleep. Why? Because the difference is, Rashi says like this. When it comes to eating, you have, a person eats a snack versus a person eats a full meal. There's an obvious difference in it. A snack does not fill them up, a full meal does. Sleep. Sometimes all a person needs is a power nap, is a short couple of minutes, 40 winks, that's what my wife calls it, and then you feel refreshed. So therefore, a nap versus several hours of sleep, it's all the same thing.
There is truth.
Yeah.
You know, in the subway all the time, David and Melech never had the 16 winks, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about that on Amud Beis. Right? We'll have that actually right here in a couple of minutes. Yeah. Here probably is as good a time as any to talk about that sikha that we've been touching on the last couple of weeks about sleeping in the sukkah. The Rebbe starts out with the obvious question that the Rebbeim were always machmir, and they taught us to be machmir to the nth degree of not even drinking water outside the sukkah. It brought the Rebbe to Shab when the Rebbe to Shab had to take medicine and he needed a drink of water with it. He didn't even go down to the sukkah for that. And yet, on the other hand, the Friedrich Rebbe says, quoted from the Mitzvah of Rebbe, that how can you sleep in Makifim Divina, and therefore we don't sleep in the Sukkah? You don't just say. I mean, it's true. And Shulchan Aruch mentions there are various occasions for not sleeping in the Sukkah. It's cold. Sometimes Ishta Ima in there, and you don't have privacy. You can be afraid of Ganovim, or whatever. There can be all kinds of reasons. But after all said and done, I mean, come on. We eat in the Sukkah even when the rain is pouring. Even though we'll learn in a couple of days that technically you're putter from Sukkah because it's a few degrees colder than in the house, we're going to give up the mitzvah of sleeping in the Sukkah. And so the Rebbe goes in, it's a very long and lomdusha sicha, but the upshot is the Rebbe explains basically that Given, so first of all, okay, so there's the fact you're mitzayer from the sukkah, the fact that you're mitzayer from the high level of kedusha there, mitzayer plus min sukkah. Now, the real question is, though, and this is what the Rebbe spends most of the time discussing, is, granted, mitzayer plus min sukkah, but nigla and chasidus, nigla and pnimiyas haTorah don't contradict each other. The Torah chasidus comes to bring out the deeper aspect of nigla. So if nigla, if black letter law in Gemara and in Shulchan Aruch is you have to sleep in the sukkah, how does it come about? Kapi chasidus, you can't sleep in there because you're mitzvah. Granted, okay, maybe you can't say a person is over and aveda because he is after all mitzvah. But how does it work out that you should have the halacha says you have to do this and chasidus says but you're not able to do it? How does that work? And the gist of it that the answer is that you brings a lot of sources that you're being mekayim in the mitzvah b'shleimus just as much whether you're sleeping in the sukkah or whether you're not. To be mekayim in the mitzvah b'shleimus, you have to be eating and drinking in the sukkah. The sleeping in the sukkah, there is a din that when you're sleeping, you're supposed to be sleeping in the sukkah, and you have a ketura mitzvah for that. But if a person is not sleeping in the sukkah, he's not losing out on the shleimus of the mitzvah thereby. So therefore, that is something that can be overridden by the issue of mitzvah. So therefore, you can have Shulchan Aruch can tell you, sleep in the sukkah, because the average person, Torah al-Oroi Tadabra, does not feel that level of kedusha in the sukkah.
Wait a minute, you're saying he's not losing anything in the mitzvah by not sleeping in the sukkah. The question is, Hasidus says that he's gaining by not sleeping in the
sukkah. No, not you're gaining. It's that how is it possible to sleep in a place of such kedusha? Right, so what we're saying is like this. Nigla is telling us you have a mitzvah to sleep in the sukkah. Whenever you're sleeping, like we're saying over you, even if you're taking a nap, it should be in the sukkah. But the actual fulfillment, so there's two different things. In other words, you have for example, when it comes to eating, you have on the one hand you have a mitzvah whenever you're eating a certain amount of food, you have to eat it in the sukkah. Number two, you're mekayim the mitzvah of sukkah. You're mekayim the mitzvah of sukkah teishu shivas yomim by eating in the sukkah. We'll actually have tomorrow the day of Rabbi Eliezer that you actually have to eat 14 meals in the sukkah throughout the 7 days of sukkah to be mekayim in the mitzvah. You have to eat 2 meals in the sukkah every day. The halacha is not like that, but still, you do have you're fulfilling the mitzvah of sukkah teishu shivas yomim by eating in the sukkah. Sleeping in the sukkah that Rebbe discusses there in the sicha is not part of this mitzvah of sukkah teishu shivas yomim. You're being teishu shivas yomim in the sukkah whether you're sleeping in it or not. There is a thing you're supposed to sleep in the sukkah. There's a thing you're not supposed to sleep outside the sukkah. But that's the same thing as you're not supposed to eat outside the sukkah, but if you're a mitzayer, then you're potter. So by the same token, then, you're not supposed to sleep outside the sukkah, but if you're a mitzayer, you're potter.
So that Yaakov, when he had a dream about the seder, still in Har Moriah, he was sleeping and...
Well, he woke up and said, how are you talking? Your Rashi says over there, Ili Yodaisi, if I had known, I would not have slept in such a place. Yeah. Yeah. The one last thing that Rebbe discusses there in the Sikha is, okay, very nice, this applies to the Rebbeim, who can actually feel the kedusha of the sukkah.
Right.
What about me? What about me who does not? But there's the idea that a chassid is mekusher to his rebbe, and ad rebbe, if a chassid or anybody who's worthy of the name chassid at least feels a tsar if he has a hiskashrus, but nevertheless he does not feel that same feeling of dusha in the sukkah. So therefore that tsar itself, that's the mitzvah, that's the tour from the sukkah then. From having to sleep. Yeah.
Well, when did that change? Like, the Alter Rebbe wasn't sleeping in the sukkah?
The Alter Rebbe, I don't know. I don't know if it mentions anywhere. In the Tzemach Tzedek's time, we do know that the Tzemach Tzedek told his Meshoras, Yosef Mordechai, to sleep in the sukkah. The Pashto says, I guess the Tzemach Tzedek himself did. The Mitzvah Rebbe is the first one who mentioned this idea, that Makifim Divina, how can you sleep there?
So
but it seems...
At that point, in other words, why the rabbis at that point... Let's say they were able to sleep in the sukkah, didn't bother them, and now it does bother them?
Nishtanu adurus, right? I mean, all these amiroim that we're talking about over here that slept in the sukkah. I mean, it was makif and dibina in their times also. But I mean, you also have to consider, you know, a tzaddik's avoda in sleeping can be more than the rest of us accomplish while we're awake, you know. It's brought, for example, that that the Arizal accomplished tremendous things during the couple of hours that he slept. Yeah. Anyway, Tani Chodah. We learn in one brayse that Yoshin Adam b'Tfilin Shena Sarai. A person can sleep a temporary sleep, a nap in Tfilin, Avoloi Shena Tfat, but not a permanent sleep. The tiny it's been keba ben arai. Another bride says you can see either way when you have tefillin. The tiny idach, and a third one says loy keba v'loy arai. Neither a nap nor permanent sleep. So what is it? You have three brides that contradict each other. The answer is lakasha. Had nakat lo biyadeh. One is talking about when you're holding tefillin in your hand, then you should not even take a nap because you might drop them. Had manchi bereshe. Second case is where you actually are wearing the tefillin, so then you're allowed to do a shenas arai during the short amount of time of a shenas arai. We're not afraid that you're going to pass wind, but not a shenas kmas, because then there's too much of a chance of it. And the third one, had paris sudra alaihu ilave. The third case is that the person actually took off the tefillin and is. And has them on the bed next to him and is covering them with a sheet. So then, actually, you've got to sleep sometime. So therefore, even though now you might argue, so don't have them on your bed, put them on a shelf or someplace. But if you don't have a shelf, or for example, the same bed. We're talking about the same bed, because in those days, that might have been the safest place to keep your tefillin, right under your hand. So therefore, yes, you're allowed to have them, but as long as you have them covered, then yes, you're allowed to go to sleep for the night even.
On top of your
you have your tefillin, you put a cloth or you put a cover or something over them, and then you can go to sleep with your hand covering them, let's say. So how much is a shenasar, right? Tony, Rami Bayechesko, Kidehiluch Mea Amos, the amount of time it takes to walk 100 Amos. So if we consider a meal is 2,000 amos, and there's different opinions how long it takes to walk a meal, anywhere between 18 and 24 minutes. So 100 amos is 1/20th of a meal. So we're talking about 1 minute, about a minute, give or take. That's a shenas arai.
Our generation is a bit.
We learned similarly in Braita, Hayoshin b'tfilin v'royah keri. If somebody is sleeping in tefillin, so obviously then we're talking about a case where the person was allowed to, and he had an experience of keri. Now he has to take them off.
How was he allowed?
Right, he didn't do it on purpose.
No, how was he allowed to put on sleep
and swim? We just said he's able to take a nap. He took that 100 amah nap to that chain of thar, right? And in it, he had carry. So now, he should hold on to the resuas and take off the tefillin holding on to the resuas. The inner oichas b'ksita, but he should not hold on to the actual box, the actual bias of the tefillin itself. Because he may have touched the carry, whatever. A person is allowed to take a nap in tefillin, but not a real sleep. Oh, so okay, according to Rabbi Yaakov, you don't have to. According to Rabbi Yaakov, it sounds like you are actually allowed to go to sleep in tefillin, and therefore you could have a possibility of carry. And the Chachamim are telling him, you know what? I mean, such a thing shouldn't happen in the first place. The person's not allowed to sleep in tefillin anyway, so therefore, realistically, such a thing should not happen. And again,
therefore you're not allowed to sleep with them.
Therefore you're not allowed to sleep permanently with them, yeah. But kama shenas arai, and how much is a shenas arai? 100 amah. So that's the real proof. That's why we brought this. But I said to prove Rami Bahama's point that a shenas arai is 100 amah.
We said there's no shirt in shema. How do you know it's a shenas arai?
That's why we started saying Zeta Shema Yeradam. But now we're saying that no, when it comes to Sukkah, maybe, that Rava was saying Ein Kvala Shena, that every kind of Shena can satisfy a person, so therefore any kind of it has to be done in the Sukkah.
Okay.
Here we're talking about Tefillin. The whole reason for not sleeping with Tefillin is Shema Yafiach Behem, so therefore, Shena Sarai, we're not so worried about it. How are you going to prevent? So like we had before, you put your head between your knees, for example, or according to the opinion that it works with Moitz or Shena Selah, that you tell somebody else, wake me up after 100 amos. Amar Rav, also la adam lishan b'yayim yosim ishenes ha-shsus. A person is not allowed to sleep during the daytime, like take a nap in the middle of the day, more than the sleep of a horse. V'kam ishenes ha-shsus shitin nishmi. How much of the horse is asleep? 60 breaths. This is the famous thing.
One minute.
So, 1 second. Are we talking about human breaths, or are we talking about a horse breath? Human breaths, 60 breaths is, like 2 or 3, like a minute or 2 minutes or so. But a horse breathes much more slowly when it sleeps. A horse takes a half hour to breathe 60 breaths when it's sleeping. And this is where we get the idea of a half hour that if you've slept a half hour is when you have to wash until the time.
Why, according to Rav, you're not allowed to sleep during the day?
But we don't do it
like that today. Rashi says, with Nebbi Tol Torah. With
Nebbi
Tol Torah, yeah. So obviously we're not talking about Rishayim then. If they're Rishayim, they're not going to be listening to this anyway.
Yeah.
In other words, it's Chinasara we're talking about, not...
Yeah.
If he needs to sleep,
if
he
person
has to sleep during the day, even.
But that's what we're saying. A person should better sleep during the night.
Of course.
And then, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
But if he's really tired, then he cannot...
If he's really tired, okay, then you sleep. Up to Shana Sassus. Amar Abaya, Shinsa Demar Kidirav, my Rebbe's sleep, meaning Rabba, was like Rab. Rabba learned from Rab how to sleep, how to take a nap during the day. Udrab to the Rebbe. Rab in turn learned from Rebbe. Udrabbi to the David. Rebbe had by tradition from his ancestors, going back to David HaMelech, so this is what David did. With the David, and how much did David sleep? Could dissociate like a horse. Or dissociate, and how much does a horse sleep? Shishin Nishmi, 60 breaths. So in other words, that David and all these other Tanoim and Amoraim in later times slept. If they had to take a nap during the day, they would sleep only less than the sleep of a horse. Which again, according to different possibilities, it means either a couple of minutes or it means a half hour, up to a half hour. And like I say, the Velt Firtzach, according to their opinion, that it means 60 horse breaths, and that is where we get the idea that only if a person has slept a half hour do they have to wash.
60 breaths of a horse is
a half hour.
It can be a half an hour.
Yes.
30 seconds
and
breath.
Oh, I guess so.
Sleeping for 30 seconds. Left the body and then came back?
Yeah. Abaya have noyim fidma'ayom kudisil abay kubi. Abaya used to sleep during the day, the amount of time that it takes to walk from Popadissa to Beit Kubi. Now, how much is that? Rashi says that it says someplace else that is six parsa. Now, of course, we have a big problem with that, because first of all, we don't know of any place else where it says that. We don't know of any other, so it might be fine to find, maybe there's some medrash or something that Rashi had, which we don't have, that actually says that. But the bigger issue is, Six parsa is 24 mil. That's a substantial amount of time. Even if a mil takes only 18 minutes to walk, a parsa takes 72 minutes. Six parsa is going to be over 7 hours. You're telling me that a bias slept for over 7 hours during the day, then the whole day is gone.
How many mil in a parsa?
Four.
How much is a mil in our
terms? A mil in our terms is about a kilometer, or about two-thirds of a mile. So, yeah, it sounds like you're talking about a very long nap. So therefore, I think Spasemis wants to say that actually it's a mistake it's a Torah Sofer in Rashi. It wasn't supposed to be six parsa, but rather 1/6 of a parsa. So then, if a parsa is 4 mil, according to the various opinions, how long it takes to walk a mil, anywhere between 18 and 24 minutes. So a parsa is anywhere between 72 and 96 minutes. So we're talking 1/6 of that. Yeah, no, it's not that much then. It comes out between 12 and 16 minutes, according to that.
And what Tosus doesn't think about that effect?
Maybe Tosus still has the correct answer. I don't know, I think Spasemis says this. I don't know if everybody agrees with him. Anyway, Kari Alei Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef applied to him the pasuk, Ad Masai Otzel Tishkav, how long are you going to sleep, you lazy one? Masai Tokam Mishnasecha, when are you going to get up from your sleep? Which, you know, if it was 7 hours, then of course we could understand Rabbi Yosef saying it to him. If it was 16, you know, if it was 12 or 16 minutes, it's a little harder to understand why Rabbi Yosef minded.
We're talking during the day.
We're not talking about. Yeah. I mean, maybe we are talking about his sleep at night, and therefore Rabbi Yosef is telling him, you know, it's true, a regular person needs 7 or 8 hours of sleep, but you have work to do, you know. You should manage with less. There's a famous verse they say about somebody, I cannot remember who, some Adam Gadol, some tremendous Tam Chacham, who used to sleep only a couple, he'd do almost like we're saying over here, even during the night, he'd sleep, you know, he'd sleep for a half hour, and then he'd wake up, and learn a bit, and then he'd go back to sleep for a little while longer, you know, like the whole sleep he had every night was maybe 2.5 hours. So they once asked him about it. He said, you know, you have some people who would take, you know, think of how it is with learning a block Gemara, for example. You know, you have somebody who slaves over it and it takes them hours to learn a block Gemara, and then you have somebody, you have a Chorif who can polish it off in 15 minutes. He says the same thing. I sleep quickly. And some people, you know, some people eat quickly, some people learn quickly. I sleep quickly.
Same person.
Yeah, but most of his life he sleeps only 2 hours every 24 hours. Because you said you have to get used to it slowly.
Right.
So the same person doesn't have to sleep a lot. If he has to pick up a winning lottery trip, all of a sudden he doesn't need it so much.
True. Yeah. Tana Rabbanan. Nichnas Lishan Bayoyim. If a person is going to sleep during the day, And as Rashi points out, he's only intending to sleep. He doesn't have intention of being the shamash mitase, which in general you're not allowed to do during the day anyway. So therefore, if he wants to take off his tefillin, he can. If he wants to keep him on, then he can keep him on. During the daytime, normally a person doesn't sleep a kriyas, so therefore we don't have to worry so much about that he'll pass wind. And we also, during the day, a person is not usually meshamish mitasei, so therefore we're not worried about that either. We're not worried that he may forget and do that in tefillin. Dibur Abnasan, Rabbi Yossi, Yeladim, Olam Chosin, Ve'enim Anichin. Rabbi Yossi says, young men, Yeladim here doesn't mean boys, it means, Rashi says Bacharim, but it doesn't mean Bacharim in the sense that we use it nowadays. It means young married, younger life, people who are newly married. La'olam chosin ve'en manichin, they always should take off their tefillin, even if they're just going for a nap during the day, and should not wear them. Because it says ve'en manichin, and they shouldn't put them back on, it sounds like, because it's common for them to become tummy. Which, it sounds like it means actually that they may experience keri. So then the question becomes, lema kasavar Rabbi Yossi, bar keri yasal aniach tefillin? What does Rabbi Yossi hold that a bar keri is not allowed to wear tefillin? And we know, I mean, there was Takanath Ezra was only that you can't learn Torah. A Baal Keri can't learn Torah. We ever heard that a Baal Keri can't wear tefillin. And Rashi points out, usually the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi in most places. So if Rabbi Yossi held that, we would have to say the halacha is like him. How you talking? We're not talking about, we started saying Yeladim meaning Bacharim, let's say unmarried men. No, now we're talking about they are married and they have their wife with them. Because they may forget themselves and then come to Pashmash Amita. That's why Rabbi Yossi said, not because he's worried about Keri, but because he's worried that they may be Mishamash Mitasei while wearing tefillin.
So it's just the fact that they want to make such a mirror or whatever, such a thing, even though there's no Matthias for it to happen, we're still, so people are careful of course they have to be.
Who says there's no Matthias of it? We'll have the very next case. Tanan Abanan, Shachach Mashimish Mitasei B'Tefillin. What happens if a person does forget and do Tashmash Amita while wearing tefillin? He should not touch neither the ritzua nor the box of the tefillin, the bayit, until he washes his hand, and then he should take them off. So not like the case we had before where with the Baal Keri, where Rabbi Yaakov says he should take them off holding the ritzua. Here, don't touch anything at all. Because the person's hands are always moving around, and as it actually says, they may have touched an unclean part of his body, so therefore it would be a bizoyan to the tefillin to touch them with unclean hands, like with tamadika hands.
Yeah, like one thing, in those days, they used to wear tefillin after dark, too?
No, not after dark, but we're talking about it. Usually a person is not mishamash mitase bayoyim, but the din is, actually, a tamad chacham can, ma'afil b'talisa, he makes the room dark, with his talus, and then he can't.
Who said
anything about Lila? We didn't see Balila. Shachach Hashemish Matasa Bitzvillin. Eina Echiz Leibur Tzuv Leibur Tzitzat. She used to do it before. Oh, sorry, you're right. I skipped the word. Balila Cholet Tzvein Mani Yechdi Reb Nassan. Right, that by night, if you're going to sleep by night, necessarily you have to take off your tefillin. You don't put them on because you don't wear tefillin by night.
In those days, you
were allowed to wear tefillin? No. Rashi says, even if you're only planning to nap by night, because by night it's much more common that you're actually going to fall completely asleep. Even if we hold that Lila is man tefillin, that you are allowed to wear tefillin at night, it's machlokes and eruvin whether you are, nevertheless, though, you still, there's the problem you may sleep in them shenas tefillin, and that you're not allowed to.
That's
right. At night. So by day, you're allowed, by day, Rav Nassim is saying you're allowed to, and Rabbi Yossi is saying it depends whether you're a younger man or not. And then we have this last thing. So we see there is a Matthias. There is a Matthias. I mean, this din is brought in Shulchan Aruch also, so evidently it happened, you know, it's happened at least once in history that somebody actually did that. Shachach Hashemish Mitasei B'Tefillin. No, okay, but, the, you know, if we, again, if we have the din, and, you know, it, most din, and we would, you know, it could happen, yeah.
Yeah,
people who are newly married, yeah.
What's the point of wearing tefillin during the day? In other words, like during davening, during Shemoneh Esrei, person is allowed to be in the fifth six hours in the school and bring this morning answer and also during learning. What's he accomplishing by wearing tefillin? And the rest of the time he's davening, he can't be in the sixth hours in the school. That's the thing about tefillin.
Actually, there is a big machlokus between Rashi and Tosfos in a number of places in Shas. When we say you're not allowed to be Messiah, Das, and Tefillin, does it mean you always have to be focusing on the Tefillin? Because then, yeah, maybe Taki, you shouldn't be wearing them all day. Or does it mean only Kalos Rosh? And in that case, then, so fine, Shemesh Mitase is Kalos Rosh. That's why you're not supposed to do it in that. But, you know, here the person forgot. But the rest of the day is not necessarily the Kalos Rosh.
He accomplishes something by wearing tefillin.
Apparently, yeah. He's Makabal all of Omar Shemayim, yeah. We had at the end of Yuma, that I think it was Rabbi Yochanan, said about himself that it would be a chil Hashem if I were to ever walk around four amas in the street without wearing tefillin. People would say, you know, obviously it's not so important.
Yeah. Rabbi Sheinberg used to wear...
Rabbi Sheinberg used to wear many pairs of tzitzis. I don't know if
he wore tefillin. I saw a picture of wearing tefillin on the plane. He was sitting on an airplane.
He wore tefillin most of the day. Yeah.
Okay. I can ask my brother, actually, he was a Talmud by Reb Chaim Pinchas, by Reb Chaim Pinchas a while, yeah.
Yes.
He lives now in Lakewood. Okay. We'll leave the Mishnah for tomorrow. Sure.